Good day, and welcome to the Latino Physicians of California media call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask a question during the question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone telephone. Please note today's call may be recorded. I will be standing by if you should need any assistance. It is now my pleasure to turn the conference over to Dr. Arevalo. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Hello and buenos días. My name is José Alberto Arevalo. I'm a physician, and I'm also the board chair for Latino Physicians of California and the chief medical officer for Sutter Independent Physicians that is based in Sacramento. On behalf of the Latino Physicians of California and our members across the state, I want to thank you all for joining us today. Joining me today are four experts in their fields, and I want to provide you with their names. Each of them will provide you with their name and affiliation when it's time for them to speak. In the order they will be speaking, we have first Dr. Sergio Aguilar-Claxoa, followed by Assemblyman Dr. Joaquin Arambula, then followed by Dr. Efrain Talamantes, and closing will be Dr. Silvia Diego. We'll try to keep our speaking portion moving along quickly so you have an opportunity to ask questions. Today, LPOC is releasing the results of our survey, the Latino Physician Needs Assessment, and also a policy brief that is 3 years in the making and is a result of our survey, interviews key stakeholders and healthcare leaders through literature and statistical review and focus groups. We are indebted to our partners, Dignity Health, California Medical Association, and the Office of Statewide Health Planning and Development for their support and assistance in completing this endeavor. What we see, and our speakers will dive into the specifics a bit more for you, is a healthcare system that is not adequately set up to meet the needs of our current and growing Latino population. The number of Latino physicians is small, representing less than 5% of all active California physicians, and this number is only going to get worse, unfortunately. Our goal here today and in the coming weeks, months, and more is to drive actions that will help turn this dire situation around so that we can give Latino patients in California access to high-quality care that they deserve, care that shows an understanding not only for their language needs, but for their cultural and health needs as well. Latinos have some of the lowest health literacy rates, and health issues are escalating quickly. We are launching a call to action to not only talk about this issue, but to bring about the actions and change that will help to fix our broken healthcare system and help us be better prepared to serve the needs of our patients and communities tomorrow. At the end of this month, we will gather Latino physicians from across the state, along with other healthcare and community leaders, to continue this dialogue on how we can move forward. We would like to invite you to join us for that symposium that will be held in Glendale, California, entitled Creating a Movement for Change, to be held on Saturday, October 29th. For more information on our symposium or for our full report, please visit our website at latinophysiciansofcalifornia.org. Before we continue with our other speakers, I do want to let you know that we will have time after our short presentations for questions from the reporters. The operator assisting our call will provide additional instructions for asking questions at that time. Thank you, and now we will continue with our speakers. And now, Dr. Sergio Aguilar-Claxoa.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Arevalo. My name is Sergio Aguilar-Gaxiola, and I'm a professor of internal medicine at UC Davis, and I'm also the vice chair of the Latino Physicians of California, and also serve as the principal investigator for the survey that Dr. Arevalo just referenced. And I would like to emphasize that there is a storm, if I can use that metaphor, hitting our state. And the storm has at least a couple of components. One of them is the increasing number of Latinos in California, and with that also the increasing as a result of the implementation of the Affordable Care Act, an increasing number of Latinos who are in need of services and they have coverage. But one of the challenges is to have access to care and utilization of services. Latinos have been underserved for a long time in terms of those key components, access and utilization, and also in quality of care. And while California is moving in the right direction in providing access to care for this population, a lot remains to be done. For example, and this is in words of Dr. Sandra Hernandez, the president and CEO of the California Healthcare Foundation, and quote, in clinical and offices, we witness many Latinos who struggle to obtain adequate medical care. Language issues, transportation challenges, and lack of cultural sensitivity are significant barriers, and many don't seek care because of immigration status, foregoing necessary treatment until they are forced to go to an emergency room, and I quote. Indeed, what we have witnessed is that Latinos often come to services, with some frequency to emergency rooms when they are kind of falling apart. So given these disparities, the survey that we are releasing today and that Dr. Arevalo referenced is a survey, a very timely survey, and by the way, it's the first survey that has been done on the state, at the state level of Latino physicians. Just to give you a little bit of information, this three-year study included interviews of key stakeholders of Latino leaders, focus groups of Latino physicians, and a survey of Latino physicians in California. And we explored the needs and perceptions of Latino physicians by looking primarily at six main areas. One is Latino health advocacy. Second, health education and prevention. Third, training programs. Fourth, mentorship programs and activities. Five, working within the Affordable Care Act and Cover California. And the last component was organ donations. One thing that I want to emphasize is that whereas Latinos comprise nearly 40% of the California population, we Latino physicians comprise less than 5% of the population. And our report also indicates that within 10 years, nearly 40% of Latinos who answer our survey will be retiring. So this is a very timely report that covers the components that I described, and that is, we're hoping that is going to help us move in the direction of covering Latinos' health and well-being in a much more effective and efficient way. And this concludes my remarks.
Thank you, Sergio. My name is Dr. Joaquin Arambula. I am an assembly member for the Southern Fresno area. It's the 31st Assembly District. I've spent my professional life as an emergency room doctor working on the front lines of healthcare, taking care of those who are sick and most vulnerable in our communities. I worked in one of those emergency departments that Sergio was referencing when people are in their worst day. And what I saw in practice was that my ER tripled in volume over the last decade. I went to go seek reinforcements. I went to go ask, you know, from other hospitals and other regions and other counties to try to recruit to my area. But I come from what some people would reference as the wrong side of the tracks, but the state has now called disadvantaged communities. That is my home. That is where I am from, and that is where I choose to practice medicine. I have spent the last 9 years in Selma, the raisin capital of the world, taking care of mi gente, my people, those that have nowhere else to turn, whose immigration status or healthcare access is lacking or wanting. And so I took care of them the best that I could, but realized that once I was outnumbered, that yo no puedo ver a mi gente solo. I could not see my people alone. And so I decided to change my life, and I decided to make a sacrifice and asked and begged and pleaded my wife to run for office and was successful about 100 days ago in a special election. I am the newest member of the California State Legislature, and I am the first Latino physician our state has ever elected to statewide office. I am proud of the fact and also agree with Sergio that this report is quite timely. It gives me the data as a scientist that I need to help to change policies at the statewide level to help to deal with this dire consequences of not having policies that effectively treat and will contribute to a community that will have physicians that look like and sound like the communities from which they come from. The lack of Latino physicians representation negatively impacts access and quality of care, especially in underserved high Latino populated areas like the ones in which I come from. And so I'm fighting to try and bring light to this area to create some momentum, because having services and physicians that are culturally and linguistically appropriate is critical for patient care, for treatment and recovery from chronic illness. The number of Latinos accepted to medical schools is not sufficient to meet the need and will only exacerbate the growing problem of access, quality, and cultural competency and understanding of the Latino community. I saw this problem firsthand. I understand how dire these consequences are. I would not have asked my family to have made sacrifices on our own lives. You know, having gone through all that time and training, if I did not believe that this was something that needed to change. You know, I come from a community where we struggled to have a voice, and I am now the voice for our valley. I get to stand up and talk about the problems of our community, and I'm privileged to do that. But one of the things that I will be fighting for diligently is to ensure that we have equal representation. You know, the stat that just jumps out for me that Sergio just mentioned was that today, right now, the state of California has roughly 40% population that is Latino. And yet our acceptance rate into our medical schools is less than 10%. It's at 9%. That's showing that we are going to have a problem going forward, and we need to start dealing with that crisis today. And so I'm asking us to take a hard look at our acceptance policy, at all of our criteria and decisions that have caused us to get to a point that we do not have adequate representation. And I'll be fighting to make sure that we increase the number of slots to both medical schools and residents. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that people have afterwards. That would be the end of my remarks.
Thank you, Dr. Arambula. This is Efrain Talamantes. I'm an internal medicine physician and also the legacy and sustainability leader for the Latino Physicians of California. And this report is largely driven by our patients' needs. As you guys have heard, the unique cultural and linguistic needs of our communities in California are really driving this need, in the sense that we are truly committed to solutions and creating a real movement for change. We recognize the access issues, the limited, sparse providers who are out in the communities, especially our safety net communities. We recognize the challenges of taking care of a largely very diverse population, and in the sense that people have different types of healthcare coverage. And we know from our work in supporting young aspiring healthcare professionals that there is a commitment from our youth to go into healthcare professions. And so we are largely asking everyone in our organization, everyone in California, to join our movement in really mentoring those young Latinos who are overly represented in our education system, to take advantage of all the opportunities available for them to be prepared to go to medical school, to go to nursing school, to go to physician assistant school, and all our other allied health professions. And so in conclusion, this movement is driven by, as you guys have heard, by the patients that we serve, and we really need help. And that help is going to come from getting more committed individuals who want to serve all the populations here in California. Thank you.
Yes, and this is Silvia Diego. I'm a family medicine physician in Modesto, California. I'm a member of the Latino Physicians of California on the executive committee. I'm also a volunteer faculty professor at UC Davis, the extension here in Modesto, California. Most importantly, I'm principal officer for Family First Medical Care, where it's a private practice where I devote most of my time taking care of the Latino patients here in our communities. And so you ask yourself, why does it matter that Latinos have access to Latino physicians? Well, it's because Latino physicians are better equipped to serve the needs of the Latino population due to sharing the same culture, the same language, and being better able to connect with the Latino patients. And hence, we all know that the outcomes are better. Latinos are very family-centric. Family is very important in our culture. We tend to stay together. We take care of our young. We take care of our old. We take care of our extended family. We learn culture. We learn values. We learn to respect others. We learn to respect our elders. We learn our traditional home remedies that have been around for centuries, taking care of ourselves. And it's not uncommon for the sick to have tried abuelita's tea for some stomach pain before they go to the doctors. But here's the problem. When the Latino patient shows up at a non-Latino doctor who doesn't understand the culture or the values, it's very difficult to establish a patient-doctor relationship. The doctor may not be sensitive to their culture. They may be even dismissive of their beliefs and their values. And this definitely tarnishes the patient-doctor relationship that then cannot be established, and good medical care does not happen. You add to the fact that the doctor doesn't speak Spanish, that there needed to be an interpreter to be able to communicate with the patient, well, that just widens the chasm between the doctor and the patient. We all know that chronic conditions require that partnership between the doctor and the patient in order for good health care to happen, but this doesn't happen. And then we wonder why there is such great health disparities in the Latinos. This doesn't happen when the Latino patient goes to see the Latino doctor because there's good communication that's established. Oftentimes we speak the same language. We definitely have the same culture, the same values, the same beliefs, and we respect. And so the outcomes are better. And you'll see as we release the survey on this as well. As a practicing physician, I see this all the time. I have patients who come to me from colleagues that are very respectable colleagues that I would definitely go see to take care of my medical needs. But they tell me, but doctora, he doesn't understand me. He doesn't know what I'm talking about. But doctora, he doesn't speak Spanish. Doctora, it just doesn't work. But doctora, can I just stay here with you? Can my family come? Can my wife come? Can my suegra come? The truth is that Latino patients will seek out the few Latino doctors that are in their community to try to get the best medical care that they can. And the other very true reality is, as you've heard, is that the few of us practicing physicians just cannot take care of the many of them. This is why it's imperative that we address the need to increase Latino physicians in California. And we urge you all to participate with us in our upcoming symposium. Thank you. That's the end of my remarks.
Thank you, Dr. Diego. Erica, that concludes our speaking portion. We are ready for questions.
Certainly. At this time, as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, you may do so by pressing the star and one on your touchtone telephone. Again, that is the star and one to ask a question. If you find your question has been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing the pound key. We'll pause briefly for questions to queue. And we'll go first to the site of Maria Ortiz Brown from Vida en el Valle.
Yes. I know I've been attending some of the roundtables that you guys have had before, but what kind of ambition you guys have in order to make sure that we have more Latina physicians, and how we can accomplish that in a good, timely manner, and not in 20 years?
This is Dr. Jose Arevalo. That is an excellent question. I think it's going to need to be a concerted effort, not just Latino Physicians of California, but it needs to be that we gather, you know, key stakeholders that includes not just the medical schools, but also includes, you know, the pipeline where our new physicians will be coming from, so that we can not only reach the population of young Latinos who wish to become physicians, but to actually be able to create the support system within those structures that will allow them to move forward in a productive manner, and to bring down the walls, because there's some significant walls that impact our Latino students that result in many of them falling off the train, so to speak. And each one of them is a huge loss. And those are things that we could potentially support and be able to retrieve and change the loss of many of these students who will eventually not just apply but actually matriculate in medical schools, and then work with the medical school so that they can complete their matriculation and result in highly qualified physicians. But we also need the support of the community by other organizations that also benefit from the improved number of Latino physicians, and that includes our partners in the healthcare systems, the integrated healthcare systems, the hospitals, the insurance companies, the pharmaceutical companies, to, you know, work with us and join us in addressing these needs. It won't be easy. And unfortunately, it's not an immediate fix. There's not an immediate fix for this for tomorrow, you know, for the next day. We're looking at the fact that we need to start now, because it really does take quite a while before we get to, you know, the end product of addressing this huge gap in our community. But we need to all work together. We need to not be discouraged, and we need to bring together individuals like Dr. Aguilar Glaxoa, Dr. Arambula, Dr. Telamantes, and Dr. Diego, and others who have a passionate view of this and want to create the solutions.
Dr. Arevalo, you mentioned to bring some of the walls. Can you mention what are those, bring those down the walls, give us a few examples of what?
Yes, I think, actually, Dr. Talamantes, I think you have since he is our legacy leader, he has a really good view, and he has a great pulse on what some of the challenges of not only undergraduates trying to move into medical school, but, you know, even while in medical school, what are some of those walls? So I'd like to ask Dr. Talamantes if he could please, you know, provide us his, you know, response.
Yeah, certainly. Thank you for the question, and what you're really referring to is that as physicians, an organization that represents the need of Latinos in California, we are going to challenge the educational system to really support and train future healthcare professionals, and it's not just physicians. We recognize the importance of having allied healthcare professionals. We know there's a need for social workers and mental health clinicians as well. And so it's really rethinking our whole education system here in California and how it needs to be stronger and aligned to support students going into healthcare. Health is a huge component of our investment, and if we're making this investment in health to really improve outcomes, we know we need to get culturally and linguistic providers. And so part of it is training. And so you're seeing already a lot of medical schools, universities changing the way they're educating students around the needs of meeting the needs of our state. So there's programs such as the program in medical education that's a UC-wide effort to really attract and train Latinos to go back to the community, to be leaders in the community as healthcare professionals. And it's programs like this that need more support. If there's a way to expand these programs, if there's a way for the community to advocate that we need more programs like this in all our medical schools here in California in order to really augment the pipeline as you're referring to. There's also our healthcare system. There's a lot of our hospitals and clinics who are now thinking about workforce. And so we want to help everyone think of where we need to make investments in education, whether it's at the primary level, at the secondary level, at the university level. We've done a lot of work partnering with community colleges. We know that there are students who are committed and focused on wanting to serve their community. And why not in healthcare? So mentoring becomes a big part of it. We need to make sure that they're getting the right guidance from their counselors. We want their teachers to be encouraging. We don't want people to continue to be told that they're not good enough, that they don't have the qualifications, that they're not going to make it. We want to change that rhetoric to really focus on the strengths that each of us recognizes in these young, energetic youth who have solutions. They've lived experiences where they haven't had insurance. They've lived with parents who are sick, and they've gone to clinics. They see how distorted our system is, and they want to fix it. And so it's making that commitment to them at the education level, making that commitment to them at the university, at the health professions level, and really at the mentoring level to make sure that they see themselves in us and that they see that our passion to really address these issues is what they're going to be taking over hopefully soon. As you have heard, a lot of our Latino physicians are retiring in the next 10 years. And so we really, really want our communities to know that they need to encourage their youth. Youth need to encourage each other. We need to encourage them to take over and make sure that I have a physician who's going to replace me to take care of all the patients I'm caring for here in Sacramento, California.
Thank you.
And once again, if you'd like to ask a question, that is the star and one. We'll pause briefly for any further questions to queue. And we do have another question. We'll go to Christina Landona from Telemundo.
Hi. Yeah. All these plans to bring in more Latino physicians seem to be pretty long term. It's not going to fix a crisis right now. So, are you guys foreseeing that California will keep on importing doctors at the rate that it has in the past, Hispanic or Latino doctors?
Again, this is Dr. Arevalo. We might ask Dr. Aguilar-Glaxioa and Dr. Arambula if they might be able to provide their perspective. That's also an excellent question.
Yes, thank you, Christina, for asking that excellent question. The demand is such, especially with the increase in demographics and also the increase in Latinos having more medical coverage and Cover California coverage, the demand is such that the offer that we have, the number of Latino physicians that the educational system across the state is producing, is not nearly sufficient. For example, in California, there are 10 medical schools, and among all the medical schools, there are about 450 new physicians that are that graduate and are getting into the workforce. For a 40 million population, it is not sufficient, and therefore, we anticipate that we will need not only physicians that are not non-Latinos, as it is happening right now, but also to have other physicians come from other states and potentially even internationally to meet the great demand. The idea and is to how to meet the needs of a growing population that is not receiving the care or not accessing care and not utilizing the services at the level of their needs. So we'll need to, as Dr. Talamantes mentioned, collectively work towards increasing the pipelines, especially of Latinos, early in their careers, to get them into the health professions, in collaboration with legislators that like Dr. Arámbula, and also in collaboration with the educational institutions, in collaboration with the media. You know, you all of you play a very important role in highlighting these tremendous needs and demand, and you know the few numbers that that can meet those demands.
Hi, this is Joaquin. You know, I love a question on urgency, and you know, I've had to go from seeing patients to learning patients at our state's capital. I understand the urgency and the need to address this critical issue, and yet. We never seem to move fast enough for my liking. You know, I come from the Central Valley where these problems are at the forefront of my thoughts while I was practicing medicine each and every day, and believe that we need to have short-term, medium-term, and long-term solutions. So I'll tell you my short-term answer. You know, for first, each and every one of us on this call inspires kids every day to want to become physicians. There aren't that many of us. And having a Latino physician stand up and say it's possible and that we come from humble roots like them allows them to dream that they can do it too. And that's not something that I think we should look past. You know, we ourselves are helping to pioneer and stand up and inspire others to do something, and that's important. You know, moderate term, I'm really looking to try and bring a medical school back to the Valley. Focus on underserved communities, disadvantaged communities, more rural areas like the ones that I serve. And so I will be fighting for the next decade to try and bring those changes to the Central Valley. You know, for example, what would it look like if I had a school in downtown Fresno in a community that is predominantly Latino? I think we'd have a higher propensity to have Latino students at that school. And that's something that I think we should be working for. You know, long term, I'm excited to hear these ideas. But, you know, I want to answer Maria's question, if I can, just for a second earlier. And first, Maria, I just want to thank you for coming to the first two roundtables. It was important to have you there, and hopefully you'll make the third. But, you know, to answer your question, Maria, you know, we now have data. This is the first time. You know, this is the first survey that we've ever done to be able to highlight exactly how critical this problem is today. Having that data, having evidence for scientists like us is imperative because we can now speak to a problem and elucidate it based on the numbers and what is going on. So hopefully that answers your question, but I have tremendous urgency to help solve this problem.
Okay, and we'll go next to the line of Anna Ibarra from Kaiser Health News. Please go ahead.
Hi, yeah, I have two separate questions, actually. First, I was wondering how you go about addressing the issue of attracting and keeping doctors in these low-income, sometimes rural areas, the Valley, for example, as some of you mentioned, because although these new doctors might be from those areas and they might want to work in those areas, a job in a bigger city, for example, might pay better. And of course, you know, fresh out of medical school, you need to pay those student loans. So how do we attract those doctors or these Latino doctors to stay in these areas when, you know, the pay is maybe not as well as or as good as in jobs in bigger cities?
Again, this is Dr. Arevalo. I wonder, Sylvia, Dr. Diego, you are one of those doctors, and you are a really icon in the community. And so would you mind giving your perspective to that really excellent question?
Sure. Sure, absolutely. And thank you for the question. You know, I think it comes from the beginning, like we said, it's the importance of having the mentorship, of seeing the community doctors who are actually in the community, Latinos who are doctors who practice medicine, who enjoy practicing the medicine. And it really is about showcasing ourselves out to those doctors who will soon graduate from medical school to tell them it's not impossible. We always hear how medicine is changing and how it's impossible to pay back your student loans, and how it's important to, like you said, go to the big cities and have the higher salaries. But the truth is that in the smaller communities, having grown up in like Dr. Arambula in Fresno, and now I'm in Modesto, there is such passion for taking care of those patients that if you develop that, that goes further than just the salary, because there is that satisfaction with the work that you do. That is very, very important. And I think that, like Dr. Talamantes said, we're training those physicians, we're exposing them in medical school and in residencies to be able to develop that passion to stay in their communities. Of course, for the future, if we definitely inspire young aspiring physicians from those same communities, the statistics will show that very many of them will return to their communities. And so it's important for us not only to touch the doctors who are soon to graduate from residencies, from medical schools, but also those aspiring, because it isn't impossible, and it's wonderful, especially when you first start. That's what you want to do. So we just need to keep mentoring them to continue on their pathway to take care of the patients that they want to in their community.
Yeah, if I could add something, this is Dr. Talamantes. One of the key things to keep in mind when we discuss these issues of people returning back to their communities, if you look at the research, there's a huge body of research where we've looked at predictors of those that will come back to these communities. And it is well documented that if you're Latino, having that ethnicity alone, you have a higher chance of ending up back in the community. But more importantly, if you are Latino and low income, and even with debt, you come back to the community, and the federal government and our state have been very clever in investing in making sure that there are loan repayment programs for healthcare professionals. And this is one of the things that we need to continue to broadcast out there, is that you can go to medical school. The design now we have is that you can go to medical school and end up debt-free and practice where you want. And if your heart is in the community, then that's possible. Now, the myth and misconception is that in these communities you get paid less, and that's not necessarily true. So I think that that's another thing that we should make sure and dispel in our efforts, is that we shouldn't say that because these communities are underserved, people are going to get paid less. Okay. Yes, I would say that the job is more challenging, but our students and or future professionals have the skill set to manage those challenges. The most common challenge is language barriers. The most common language is not understanding the culture. our students have that because of who they are. And lastly, California, our governor just signed SB 1139 that allows Dreamers. These are students who don't have documentation but have lived in this country since they were children and have been educated here, have gone to universities. They are now eligible to get state funding in order to go to health profession schools. And so we're very excited, again, as the Latino Physicians of California, to continue to support these types of solutions to create real movements for change.
If I can complement Dr. Talamante's excellent response and Dr. Diego as well to your question, Anna, I think that we need to not only look at short-term immediate needs, like the question that you asked, attracting doctors to the underserved areas, but to look at the longer-term solutions, something that the five of us on this press conference are very much invested in. Dr. Arambula already emphasized the importance of increasing the number of Latino students who get into medical school, as also Dr. Talamantes did. And I want to just share with you something that we include in the Latino Physicians Needs Assessment Survey that is released today. On page 7, we emphasize that physicians who are underrepresented minorities, including, of course, Latinos, are also more likely to serve medically underserved populations, to serve patients of their own ethnic group, serve Medicaid recipients, and work in health workforce shortage areas. So that's what we know. That's what the data tells us. And I can tell you, as we work, for example, with counties, when we speak about the workforce already in the rural counties, is that money is not the only important consideration for them to not only to come to the area, but to be retained. But it is you know, the commitment that they have to be a part of the solution. I think that the story that Dr. Arambula has told us of being a very well-established emergency doctor in the Fresno area and coming to the legislation, you know, based on sacrificing many, many things because he has seen the need. And it is one very inspiring example of this need to attract doctors to the underserved areas and retain them there.
And we do have one more question. We'll go to Ray De La Cruz from Victorville Daily. Please go ahead.
Good morning. First of all, before I ask my question, I want to thank all the doctors for taking their time, their valuable time, for doing this panel discussion and for enlightening us into the needs to serve the Latino community. A quick statement, and then I will ask my question. First of all, everything that everyone has mentioned today is reflected in a recent survey that came out that ranked California 37th over all Hispanic integration. And as I wrote my story on this survey, one of the things that it did mention that as it ranked in different dimensions, cultural and civic integration, business, it ranked in Latino integration in California, it ranked near the bottom, number 48 in education. And I believe that as we try to educate our future physicians, that this reflects that survey. And everything that you said echoes everything that we are experiencing one-on-one here in Southern California, here in the high desert of Southern California. And also, it reflects California in general. So you guys are spot on, and thank you for what you're doing. This question basically is more meat and potatoes. It comes straight to the physicians. This is for all the physicians. You can all answer, or you can choose one or two to answer that straight. Personally, what challenges did you face as you all pursued your medical careers? Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think all of us can actually tell you our own personal challenges, and just to kind of because of time, I can summarize very briefly. To me, the biggest challenge was that there was really minimal support at my. I was a University of California, Berkeley undergraduate, and this was long ago. And at the time, unfortunately, there was no support. I was felt isolated. I felt different. I felt, that I didn't really belong at the University of California, one of the major institutions in the world for learning. And it was only through, working hard to find people like me at the university that were willing to stick together and share ideas and support each other, that I felt that support was major in my quest to move forward to go to medical school. I was very fortunate. I was able to, move to Stanford Medical School, where that support actually increased significantly in medical school. But the challenge of getting to medical school was huge when I was going to University of California, Berkeley. And I don't think that I'm any different than a lot of my Latino counterparts today, except we do have LPOC, we do have, Mi Mentor, we do have other things that we've developed now that, can help our students, but they still have to be able to access that. But I think you're absolutely right. There are some huge challenges, and so that was one of them, and there were others that I could actually spend a few hours talking about, but because of limited time, I want to turn it over to some of my colleagues.
This is Joaquin again. The struggle I'd like to highlight is simple logistics that I did not have an opportunity to attend medical school within my valley. It's difficult when you have to go away to school. And, medicine is fairly universal amongst areas, but it is regional as well. And it would have been nice to have trained in my backyard. Now, I was lucky to be able to return and do residency in Fresno, but would have liked the advantage of going to medical school, and hence the reason why I'm dedicating myself to try and bring a medical school back to the Valley. I think it's imperative we train people in the communities that they live so they'll stay in the communities. I think we've glossed over something, and I really want to touch on it if I can, It comes from actually practicing medicine. There's an advantage you have to practicing in rural communities, and that is that you deal with real people, real members of your social fabric. And it is a true joy to practice medicine here in the Central Valley and to take care of people who truly don't have anywhere else to turn. And it's sad that the only place they can come is the emergency department, and I insist that we find a system that treats their needs better, but we have to start by training people from our communities, in our communities, to stay and take care of our community. And so, my biggest struggle was didn't have the opportunity to do it in my backyard.
This is Sylvia, and I want to echo the same thing that the other speakers, the other doctors have said. Being a Latina physician, coming from a very traditional Latino family, my parents were farm workers. Nobody went to college but me, and, to have the support system. They didn't know how to support me. They thought I was crazy that I wanted to go away from home, and all I did was go to Fresno State, which was still an hour away from where my home was in the Central Valley. And that was very difficult for them, and every time I would come home, why don't you just stay home, mija? Why do you have to go back? That was very challenging.
and to be able to have mentors, other doctors who had done that and see them, but there weren't very many of them, it was very, very challenging. I was fortunate that I got to go to school, I think like most of us here in California, because I don't know what would have happened if I hadn't gotten into California. It wasn't even a possibility because I wasn't even allowed to apply to any school outside of California. But had that not happened, because, you know, family's first. Family is first for us. And so then it would have even been more challenging. And so we need to be able to reach out to those aspiring physicians and be able to encourage them and to their families and let them know it's okay. It's okay to let your mija go away to the school in Iowa because they're going to be very supportive and she's going to come back and she's going to be a great physician. But of course, like Dr. Arambula, I agree that if I had been able to train in Fresno, that would have been great. Stanford was a very good second best though. And so that definitely family, the support system, the fact that I did come out with huge loans was kind of scary, but I knew that we would be able to pay for them. I was a National Health Service scholar, so that definitely helped to be able to find and meet, like Dr. Talamantes said, tap into those resources is very important. But when you didn't have someone who was guiding you, it was kind of difficult because at the end of the day, you go to the schools that maybe aren't very supportive and they don't necessarily know where to guide you to find those resources. So that's very important. Those were challenges that I met for sure.
This is Efraín Talamantes. Just to be brief, we really do need a real investment in leadership, and we recognize that, as you guys have heard, the medical, the healthcare workforce and the medical schools, the folks who are in leadership positions don't necessarily mirror who we are, and we need them to commit to us, we need them to accept us, we need them to welcome us with open arms because we are part of the solution in helping improve health, the health of our communities.
And this is Sergio Aguilar Gaxiola. Victor, that's a wonderful question about the challenges that each of us experienced as we went through our journey. And based on the excellent responses that I think my colleagues have mentioned, I would summarize it that there are individual, family, institutional, and societal challenges for all of us. You heard already some of the individual challenges that many of us heard, perhaps, you know, you don't have the what it takes to get into medical school. You will make it, you know, and that, you know, sometimes is internalized. I have run into students who are brilliant, but they don't accept. It's difficult for them to see themselves in that light because of the messages that they have received consistently. And I have heard, as Sylvia mentioned also, a family that sometimes is, and you know, families mean well. They want to protect us. And sometimes the support is not necessarily there, as I have seen it in some parents. But once they understand what the passion that their children have to go the extra miles, and they provide their blessing, you know, tremendous things happen, as I have seen it firsthand. Institutional, once one gets into medical school, there are many challenges that I have seen, you know, and experienced as well. Challenges from, you know, the lack of appropriate mentorship, the lack of having access to experiences that enrich other students. There are some of us who or some in on the speakers who were the first ones to go into certainly into medical school in their families, and it's breaking ground, and it is difficult with a set of challenges that go along with that, and finally societal challenges, the loans that were mentioned already, the policies, the laws, the availability of, you know, schools that take a risk to accept sometimes students who don't shine in terms of the GPAs or the MCATs, you know, which are a couple of components that are considered for medical admission to medical schools. So it is a composite, it's like a kaleidoscopic view of challenges that we face. But you know, if we were able to make it into medical school, and now we are advocating, so are thousands of students here in California and elsewhere, Latino students who can make it. And there are programs like Dr. Arevalo mentioned, Mi Mentor, that is led by Efrain Talamantes, that are doing an incredible service to, you know, face those four challenges that I mentioned. I would encourage all of you to look in the internet, Mi Mentor, and you will see what a wonderful framework it has, and has been quite successful already in increasing the pipeline.
Erica, this is Bobby. We're closing it at an hour. I think if we have one more question in the queue, we can take it quickly.
We have no further questions in the queue.
Okay.
So this is Sylvia Diego, and I know we're closing, but can I just add one more challenge that I think it goes an unspoken challenge? As I was thinking, this is my hardest challenge, is how many times was I kicked out of the doctor's parking lot by other doctors who would say, this is just for doctors. What are you doing parking here? And hopefully, I graduated from medical school 20 years ago. Hopefully, that doesn't happen to our young. But that's true. We often don't speak about this challenge, for sure, the institutional challenge of the unacceptance of the Latinos in the traditional medical schools.
Thank you, Dr. Diego. So just as we wrap up, just wanted to give a couple phone numbers and details in case any of you have any follow-up questions or would like a one-on-one interview, potentially someone on camera. For any interviews, if you want to schedule any interviews with any of the representatives from Latino Physicians of California, you can contact myself, Bobby Pena, or Jill Melby at 916-440-0980. Again, 916-440-0980. If you are interested in potentially arranging an interview with our assemblyman, Dr. Arambula, you can contact Hans Herman. That's Hans Herman, and his phone number is 916-319-2031. Again, Hans Herman, 916-319-2031. And finally, both the policy brief and the full report is up on Latino Physicians of California website. That website, again, is all one word, Latino Physicians of CA, not the entire California, just CA, latinophysiciansofca.org. And Erica, I believe that concludes our call for today.
Thank you. We'd like to thank everybody for their participation on today's conference call. Please feel free to disconnect your line at any time.